bulldozer, a barge, and a bunch of rocks. That was the start of Northwestern University's Lakeville, what is now a grassy, tree-dotted haven, complete with a lagoon and buildings galore, was once nothing more than a small, unremarkable section of Lake Michigan. Not a single person swung in a hammock, searched library shelves, or scored championship-winning goals atop its then aquatic surface. But a desire to expand the academic and research capacities of the university prompted the conversion of this lake area into land, for classrooms, fields, concert halls, and more. It was an idea that President of the Board of Trustees John G. Searle called
daring in concept and design and bold in execution.
In his speech at the October 1964 dedication of the Lakeville campus. But what was the design exactly? How does one create land from no land? You start with a ton of rocks. Well, okay, 224,500 tons of rocks. Chicago architecture and engineering firm Skidmore, Owens, and Merrill approached the Lakeville challenge like a coloring book. Initial construction focused on the building of a seawall which ran largely parallel to shore and over 1,000 feet from the edge of Northwestern's campus. That seawall is now visible as the giant painted boulders at the edge of the present-day Lakeville.
You've probably seen a few winter storms in Lake Michigan, and they can be pretty energetic. And so the riprap, that stuff is called riprap, that they put along the shore is intended to essentially stabilize the shore and prevent erosion of the shore.
That's Dr. Brad Sageman, a professor of Earth and Planetary Sciences at Northwestern and co-director of the Trinans Institute for Sustainability and Energy. Sageman said limestone and related rocks were likely chosen for the seawall because of their hardness and relative source proximity to Evanston.
So by choosing that material, you fundamentally reduce the transport distance to bring it to the site.
Electrical engineer John Sanderson wrote in 1968 that the university initially planned to transport all of the limestone for the seawall via trucks. But after Evanston City Council shared concerns about potential damage to city streets, the university agreed to largely employ aquatic modes of transportation. Sanderson wrote that this, quote, proved to have been a wise decision because had the material been delivered by truck, there would have been some 150,000 truckloads of the largest highway semi-trailers. End quote. Illinois limestone first met its seawall fate on July 11, 1962, when crushed pieces of the rock were shoved into the Lake Michigan waters by a bulldozer atop a barge. The limestone ranged in size from dust to 50-pound rock and was moved directly to Evanston from Romeoville, Illinois, on barges via the Chicago Sewage and Ship Canal, the Chicago River, and of course, Lake Michigan. After the core was placed, larger limestone rocks from the same source were positioned above it in a similar manner. A picture from the October 1964 edition of the Northwestern Alumni News depicts that pivotal first day. University President Dr. J. Roscoe Miller and University Vice President Mr. William Kerr watched the bulldozer closely. But despite their presence on that first day, there was no official university celebration to mark the start of seawall construction. And it all had to do with the dunes. Controversy arose in April 1962 when it was widely publicized that the sand for the actual Lake Fill would be sourced from the Indiana Dunes, a treasured natural landmark. Illinois Senator Paul Douglas was active in dune conservation efforts during the late 1950s and early 60s. he urged Northwestern to change its contract in order to purchase from companies who would not source from the dunes. The area of the Indiana Dunes to be dredged was owned by Bethlehem Steel. The Chicago Sun-Times reported in April 1963 that Northwestern signed with its dredging companies before knowing where these groups would dredge the sand from. When it was discovered that the sand would be sourced from the Indiana Dunes, these companies were prohibited by Bethlehem Steel from exiting their contract and looking for sand elsewhere. Wilmette resident James H. Labadie was one of many who expressed their frustration about the situation in letters to the university. Labadie wrote, quote, "One is nauseated, but not surprised, to learn that a third-rate institution like Northwestern plays footsie with an outfit like Bethlehem Steel in the desecration of the Indiana Dunes. It is truly most appropriate that Northwestern, an insult to the honorable word university, bought sand from this bunch of crooks." End quote. But it wasn't just letters. A version of Northwestern's fight song, complete with updated lyrics credited to Pat Walsh in university archive documents, pointed a finger directly at the institution. I will now attempt to provide a recreation of said song, with the condition that listeners understand that this is purely for demonstrational purposes. The song went a little something like this. "We'll blame Northwestern when they wreck the dunes. They can get the film more cheaply, other places give it freely." Yeah, the syllables don't quite line up with the original, but you get the idea. All of this fanfare motivated the university to enact a public relations program which called for minimal coverage of the start of construction on the seawall to avoid encouraging, quote, "new activity on the part of the Save the Dunes Committee and their followers, resulting in additional unwanted press coverage," end quote. But enough about sand. Let's head back to the seawall. As you'll recall, the first two layers were made of pieces of crushed limestone, transported by barge from Romeoville with relative ease. The wall was constructed kind of like a trapezoid. A design cross-section referenced by Sanderson shows the smallest rock, or the chlorophyll, forming an asymmetrical trapezoid at the base of the lake. On top and on the lake-facing slope of this trapezoid are the larger pieces of crushed limestone. Above this is rock which puts the foundation below it to shame. The cover stones, also referred to as wave absorber in planning documents, weighed over 2,000 pounds.
They were big boulders, you know, they were like maybe almost as big as the Volkswagen Beetle.
That was Andrew Malcolm, a Northwestern alum who covered the Lakeville's dedication for the Daily Northwestern, where he served as executive editor from 1965 to 1966. The cover stone had to be transported by rail and truck from Bloomington, Indiana, over 200 miles away from Northwestern's campus. When each load of limestone boulders arrived in Evanston, it had to be loaded onto a barge. Once near campus, it was extremely difficult to place the cover stones in the intended, orderly manner.
I have a vague memory of, like, there was a crane, and they would pull up a big barge, and the crane, you know, you could hear the engine going, and you'd hear these sort of very loud splashes when they would shove the rocks, you know, pick them up and drop them into the water.
That was Richard Cheverton, Northwestern alum and 1963 to 1964 editor-in-chief of the Daily Northwestern. The first installment of land was ultimately finished in 1964, but many of the university's most notable buildings, Walter Athletic Center, University Library, Norris, and others, still had yet to be built. It's worth noting that while Northwestern's Lakeville may have been a vital part of the school's Evanston campus for the past 60 years or so, The limestone that forms the Lakeville's backbone has existed for hundreds of millions of years. Much of the limestone throughout Illinois and the Midwest traces its origin back to the shallow sea which existed over the area more than 300 million years ago. Algae secretions, shells, and dead coral accumulating on this seafloor deposited calcium, which, along with carbonate mud, compacted under the weight of overlying rock to produce limestone. That rock has completed a drastic journey. From contact with the warm waves of an inland sea over 300 million years ago, to the whir of a steam drill during excavation, the rapid back and forth of a bandsaw, the tug of a barge, the lifting arm of a crane, and now the frigid, crashing waves of Lake Michigan, where, through sun and snow, it sits, slowly eroding, on the edge of Northwestern's Lakeville campus. Special thanks to Northwestern University historian Kevin Leonard and the staff of the Northwestern University Archives for their vital role in supporting the research for this story. Thank you also to Andrew Malcolm, Richard Cheverton, Brad Sageman, and Stu Van Ormer for their time and insights. I'm Rose Carlson for WNUR News.